You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
From the depths of the sea, this is Transmissions from Atlantis, a sci-fi, fantasy, and horror podcast with a special emphasis on Doctor Who. Featuring the creators of Seekers of the Lost Worlds, Rita and J.C. Delatorre.
Hi there, folks. My name is J.C. Delatorre.
And I'm Rita Delatorre.
And this is episode 142 of Transmissions from Atlantis, and we got an awesome show for you this week.
Oh, yeah. As you can tell by our t-shirts, we are obsessed with Ready Player One at the moment.
And that'll be our main topic. In addition to that, we do have some rapid-fire stuff. So we have a new addiction on Netflix called Ripper Street, the BBC show that has been on for about 5 years that just wrapped up its series.
We're also going to be talking a little bit more about Black Panther.
Yes, some big news with Black Panther. In addition to that, Constantine is now a regular on Legends of Tomorrow.
Spielberg says that the next Indiana Jones could be a woman.
And Supernatural was renewed for its season 14. And, of course, we got to talk about Scooby Natural.
Of course. And then could Meryl Streep be replacing Leia in the Star Wars universe?
No! Don't do that!
Well, we'll talk about that on Rapid Fire.
Yes, we will. In addition, we have a very special interview this week. We'll be talking to R. Alan Siler, the director of Wholanta, one of our favorite conventions for Doctor Who. That'll be part of our Doctor Who segment. And in addition to that, Stephen Moffat has found a way to include the Peter Cushing Doctor Who movies into canon. How the hell did he do that? We'll tell you.
Interesting.
All right, well, first, let's start off with
Rapid Fire.
All right, folks, it's time for Rapid Fire, Rita, Ripper Street.
Well, you know, we knew about this show, I think, in passing, but we never really stopped and watched it because there were so many other things we were trying to catch up on and watch. So we finally got around to checking it out, and wow, were we missing a really good show.
Yes, and now we are totally addicted to it. The acting is absolutely superb. I love the storyline. You know, I always was a little leery about, you know, the whole Jack the Ripper thing. I don't want to say I'm a Jack the Ripper fan because that sounds terrible, but I love the case of Jack the Ripper. I find it such an interesting
Well, it's story. Fascinating.
It's a fascinating story of how this man terrorized a community back in Victorian times.
And the fact that he was never caught.
Right.
And he was at large, and I'm assuming, considering the timing, he's already dead by now.
Of course he is. Of course. You think?
But the fact that
he could have traveled in time, because remember there was that one movie?
That's right. The whole point is that the Jack the Ripper story never had any closure because he was never caught.
Right.
And it to this day, it still remains a mystery.
Yep, and so Ripper Street takes place just after the whole Jack the Ripper thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically the homicide division of Whitechapel solving murders in Victorian times, but it has kind of like a CSI feel to it, but not as science-y because obviously the science wasn't there yet.
Well, and that's what's kind of cool about it. This is the time period where they're discovering the science behind CSI.
Yeah, discovering how to use fingerprints and
or lip prints and using different chemicals to find out certain things.
Yeah.
So it's really, really cool.
Yeah, and all of the mysteries so far have been very, very good. The overall story arcs with all the different characters has been fantastic. And It was a well-written show. It's definitely something that you should watch.
I would say the only thing that I probably didn't like about the show is the 4-year jumps in between seasons.
Yeah, they do take some time jumps, especially in between season 2 and 3 and season 3 and 4. And they go right into season 5, though, so there's no time jump between season 4 and season 5 because it ends in a cliffhanger. And so, but overall, I guess the time period goes from, and that's the interesting thing about that too, is that because of the time jumps, you also see new inventions like the telephone replacing the telegraph. You know, it's a really cool show, folks. You should definitely check it out.
All right, next up, a little bit more news on Black Panther. It has now topped Titanic.
And now there are only 2 movies that have ever made more money than Black Panther.
And that's Avatar and Star Wars.
The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi.
To me, that is absolutely amazing. I am so happy that Black Panther has done this well. And I mean, it was one of the best Marvel movies. Everybody said it. And obviously the social considerations in regards to it. It deserves everything that it's been getting, and you know, it's fantastic that it's done this. And
I think wait for the sequel.
And I think it shook Hollywood. I think Hollywood has finally woken up to the fact that, you know, you don't have to have an all-white cast and, you know,
right?
You know, white leads. I mean, you can definitely have a minority cast and still be successful. Duh.
Right? Constantine is now a regular on Legends of Tomorrow.
So Legends of Tomorrow is one of those DC shows like Arrow and The Flash, and unfortunately Reed and I have not really gotten into those shows. So I have not seen a single second of Legends of Tomorrow. I do know that John Barrowman has cameoed in it, and that Arthur Darvill, who played Rory in Doctor Who, has a major role as a time traveler. Go figure, right? So John Constantine obviously was a show that was on Fox, based on the Neil Gaiman comic series Sandman, the character from Sandman. And Constantine, I think, is a character that we identified with. We did watch the Fox show when it was on. Loved the show.
It was fantastic, and then it got canceled. And then it got canceled. Season.
And so Constantine suddenly disappeared for, you know, a couple years. There was talk that he might be revived in like a web series or something like that. And then he became a recurring character in Legends of Tomorrow.
Because the thing is, even though the season was canceled, but the fans were very extremely disappointed, and they mm-hmm. were letting themselves, you know, be yep. heard.
So it's found its place on the CW. And now, I guess, we might have to start checking out Legends of Tomorrow now that Constantine's there.
Yep. Well, we'll have to see. Does that mean we have to check out Arrow and The Flash and
no.
all those?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, although I will tell you that the one episode I did watch of The Flash, I liked it. I liked it a lot. Arrow, I could never get into. I'm sorry, guys. I know there's a lot of people out there that absolutely love Arrow, live and die by Arrow. It's not my show. I just can't do it.
Even I've tried watching it, and I'm sorry, I find it boring.
Yeah. All right, so how about this news? Steven Spielberg says that the next Indiana Jones could be a woman.
Well, why not? The next Doctor is going to be a woman. Why can't the next Indiana Jones be a woman?
I think we already had Indiana Jones as a woman as Lara Croft, so I don't know. I understand Doctor Who becoming a woman because Doctor Who can be anything. You know, he can be an alien for, well, he is an alien, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He can be a non-humanoid type alien. Time Lords have that capability. But for an iconic role like Indiana Jones or James Bond or things like that.
Yeah, if they were to make James Bond a woman like Jane Bond.
Yeah.
That wouldn't work.
That are established male characters. I don't think you need that. I mean, you already have a Lara Croft. You know, you have female adventurers.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I don't really think you need to do that. And to be quite honest with you, I think Spielberg was just kind of saying it in jest. I don't think he was actually seriously considering making Indiana Jones a female. He was just kind of throwing it out there as, kind of a parlor trick. But I don't know. For me, Indiana Jones should be a guy. He should stick to the canon. You know, that's like, why can't a guy be Princess Leia?
Now,
because there's obvious reasons for that.
Yes. Now, speaking of Lara Croft, we did recently watch the movie.
Yes, and it was surprisingly good. It was better than I thought it was going to be.
A lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
It was definitely not Angelina Jolie's Lara Croft, and I think I'm actually happy for that.
Mm-hmm.
Not that to knock those films, because they were entertaining, but this film left the more mystical and supernatural stuff out, and it was definitely a little bit more adventurous and grittier.
And it was an origin story. I mean, Laura hadn't already inherited her millions of dollars, and she hadn't figured everything out. You know, she was just kind of feeling her way through it. So
exactly,
it was basically Lara Croft's first adventure.
Yeah,
and I kind of dug it. I liked it.
Me too, and I really liked the actress who played Lara Croft.
Yeah, she did well.
All right, next up, Supernatural renewed for season 14.
So, how about Supernatural, one of the longest running shows in history?
Well, this is what I have to say about Supernatural. Like a lot of other series that, you know, have a really, really long run, some seasons are better than others.
Sure.
But the past season for Supernatural has actually been pretty good.
Yeah.
It has not been bad. And it's been really entertaining, and I'm kind of liking where they're going with it right now.
Absolutely.
So yeah, bring on season 14.
And I think that the key piece to the entire Supernatural longevity is the fact that the two main actors, Jensen Ackles and the guy that plays Sam.
Padalecki.
Jared Padalecki, yes. Thank you. Those two guys have been constant. Now, sure, you know, Sam dies every other year, and then Dean dies every other year, but they are always back, and they're always in every single season, and I think that is why Supernatural has lasted so long, because they are the core of the show. You lose those two boys, it's over.
And here's the thing about that. The two of them are not just dedicated to the show. They're also friends, you know, mm-hmm. off the set.
Yep.
Like, really, really good friends. And I think it's because of that cohesion that the show has lasted this long. Yep. It's because they've been so loyal and dedicated to the series.
Yeah, and other than Castiel, I think that all the other characters, Bobby, you know, the Wayward Sisters, you know, all those characters, they can come, they can go, you know, no big deal. As long as you have the trifecta, I think you're good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, continuing on with Supernatural, we're going to talk
Scooby Natural. Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That was absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect. They couldn't have done it any better.
I just don't know what to say about it. We all grew up watching the Scooby-Doo series, mm-hmm. right? And seeing the Scooby-Doo gang with the Supernatural gang, it was like,
and the fact that they used an actual Scooby-Doo cartoon and just kind of made it their own.
Yes.
That was fantastic.
I think my favorite part of the whole episode is seeing the Scooby gang's reaction
to
real supernatural
dying.
Things. To people actually dying.
Yes.
Oh, they've been stabbed to death. Well, this is a mystery now. We have to solve it. I'm like, you're not reacting to the fact that this guy literally bled out in this bed. He's riddled with stab wounds, and you're not freaking out over that?
Yeah. And of course, the ending, spoilers, you know, of course.
Spoilers!
Where Dean is the one explaining everything to them so that they have that comfort level that it was all, you know, all
yeah, yeah, because now they're having a crisis of faith because they just realized the supernatural is real.
Yeah. And of course, the whole funny joke about it is that a lot of people have always compared Supernatural to Scooby-Doo, you know, because it follows kind of that pattern. The only difference is that the supernatural aspects of it are real and not, you know, usually a real estate developer trying to swindle people out of money, right? So, but ironically, this episode, the bad guy was
a real estate
developer trying to
swindle people out of money. There was one thing that I wish they would have done.
Okay.
When Scooby and Shaggy had fallen off the balcony and Castiel went after them and his coat kind of turned into a parachute thing, I wanted him to actually sprout wings.
Oh, yeah. That would have been interesting.
That would have been kind of cool. They're like, "You're a what?" I wanted to see the whole "you're an angel" reaction with the Scooby
gang. Oh, and I love how, you know, when Shaggy broke his arm, you know, all the Scooby gang started arguing with each other. Like, "This ain't supposed to happen to me, man. What's going on? Scoob and I try to tell you all the time, and you never believe us." You know? That whole thing. I love that whole interaction with them just freaking out.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be one of the Scooby. I said Scooby.
Yep.
This is going to be one of those supernatural episodes that's going to be a cult classic.
Yeah.
Just like the musical episode, for
example. Well, I've already seen the t-shirts of Scooby Natural, you know. I think some of our friends have actually picked it up.
I actually saw them at Hot Topic.
Yeah. So, I mean, brilliant, brilliant decision by the writers of Supernatural. And, you know, Supernatural is a show that kind of shows you how to do it. You know, Walking Dead kind of lost their way.
Yeah.
And because I think they started to feel the weight of their own subject matter, right? But Supernatural always finds a way to kind of reinvent itself while keeping the core storylines of, you know, the core pattern that everybody loves so much and that everybody's gotten used to.
Yes, exactly.
And shows don't always do that, and that's why so many shows end after, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 seasons. But Supernatural, that's why it keeps going.
It's going on for 14, and I think it's going to continue going on for even more as long as they keep coming up with awesome material.
That's right.
All right, so now we're going to end the rapid fire with one more topic. Meryl Streep might replace Carrie Fisher as Leia.
No. 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 Hell no. Do not do this, Disney. Do not do this. Nobody wants to see any other actress play Leia.
Okay, and it's not just about Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep is an amazing
actress.
Fantastic actress,
yeah.
You cannot replace Leia. Period.
You cannot replace Carrie Fisher as Leia.
No. Digitize her? Fine. You know, use footage from the past? Fine. You cannot replace an iconic character as Leia with anybody else other than Carrie Fisher.
Yes.
I don't care. Make a deal with the devil. Bring her back from the dead if that's what you gotta do.
And frankly, I don't care that, you know, you've got this Solo movie, Han Solo prequel film where you recast Han Solo.
That's different.
That's different. You know, because you needed a young actor to kind of take on that role. It makes sense. But you cannot have Leia in the current Skywalker timeline replaced by Meryl Streep. As fantastic as Meryl Streep is, and I'm sure she'd do a very fine job as Leia, but it just would feel wrong.
It would be disrespectful to Carrie Fisher's memory.
Yeah,
plain and simple.
And frankly, I'm sure Carrie Fisher would say, "Sure, what the hell, go for it." But I just feel like it just feels wrong to me.
Yeah. Yeah. No. No, Disney. Please don't do it.
Yep. All right. Coming up next, we are gonna talk the fantastic, fantastic new Spielberg movie, Ready Player One.
What are we doing?
I don't know. I mean, are we really adventurers? I'm not exactly Harrison Ford.
I think we should do it.
I have learned about you from a mutual acquaintance and have ascertained that your adventurer spirit can continue where I left off. Enclosed in the suitcase is all you need to begin your journey, your servant. This looks really old.
Well, what you have here, Rita, is a stone tablet with ancient Sumerian inscription. This word right here, if I didn't know better, it was Atlantis.
Atlantis? As in the lost continent? I mean, that's just fiction.
Do you happen to be an archaeologist?
That depends.
On what?
On if Indiana Jeb here's got something else to wear.
Hey.
I mean, come on, really?
The reason we're here is because the tablet said we would find the key to Solok in the Cave of the Protected.
Cave of the Protected?
Yeah, it's somewhere here on Kauai, in the deepest part of the jungle, in fact.
the private journal of Captain Barnaby H. McIntosh, privateer and adventurer.
This journal reads like a fantasy novel.
So what have you found so far?
It's hard to read, but McIntosh is talking about someone trying to gain access to Atlantis.
Clarius?
The portal to Atlantis was sealed to protect it from Clarius.
But why? I mean, who is this guy?
Another trap.
What is it?
Spores. Toxic spores. Hit the ground. We gotta go. Move, move.
It's a cryptex, like Da Vinci Code.
Oh my.
Is that real? Hey, shouldn't we be in like a map room or something?
There's a red mark. Is that pointing to the Bahamas?
Let's just get into some dry clothes.
Hey, did you bring a hair dryer or a fan?
I think Sarah has one.
Does she? Do you have one?
Yeah, like...
No, I don't.
We're here prepared.
You're an adventurer ever.
You got your flat on here.
One of the most anticipated films this year, Ready Player One.
Yep.
Directed by Steven Spielberg himself. We got to see it last weekend and, well...
Yeah.
I think my gird.
Hey, Mikey, I think she liked it.
I was just so blown away by this movie. I can't even say, enough good things about this film.
Yeah, and let's set this up, though, because there was a lot of predictions of failure for Ready Player One, simply because of this whole Gamergate thing. And why don't you tell people about that?
And if you haven't heard about Gamergate, took place over a span of, a few years? Mm-hmm. And it was essentially young boys harassing gamer girls about gaming in general. And harassments were going as far as death threats, rape threats.
It was just very, very nasty business.
Nasty, very violent. Gamergate never got physical. It all remained online
as far as we know of. Yeah.
But it was one of those situations where geek boys were being feeling threatened by geek girls.
Yep.
And calling, gamer girls as fake and this and that, when in reality, it's...
Yeah,
not the case.
And if I remember correctly, even Felicia Day was...
Had been harassed, and she got, very involved in the whole Gamergate situation
as well. Yeah, so it was just very, very ugly business. And right around this time, Ready Player One had already come out.
The book.
As a novel. And, you know, it was very, very popular among the gamer community until Gamergate. And then the entire outlook on Ready Player One kind of changed.
Yeah, because there was a lot of backlash because of it. I recently read Ready Player One after I watched the film. And I have to say, I loved the book. It was so much fun to read. And that's what's great about this story is that it's fun. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a I'm gonna find myself type book. It's not that type of book, and it's riddled with 80s pop culture.
Yep.
For games, comics, movies, music, name it, it's in there.
And you know, it's kind of funny because I didn't feel like there was any elements of the whole Gamergate issue in Ready Player One, the film. In fact, Artemis is one of the main characters of the film. She's an empowered female, you know, and yes, of course, there are the guy is the hero.
Yes.
But at the same time, I didn't think that took away from her or H being, you know,
spoilers.
Spoilers. H is a girl. You know, I didn't see either situation really taking away from the character. Yeah.
And honestly, I didn't feel that way in the book either. I felt that Artemis's character was also a strong character in mm-hmm. the book, very independent, very self-assured, and I enjoyed her character.
So yeah, anybody that's refusing to see Ready Player One because of the Gamergate thing, don't let that stop you from seeing this film, because I didn't get any element out of it that there was any kind of bias against female gamers or anything like that. It was really the alternative. Now, let's focus more on the movie. And obviously, when you make a project like this, it's very, very difficult to get all of the properties that were in the book. So there are a lot of references in the book that aren't in the film just because they couldn't get the rights to those properties.
Exactly. In fact, most of the pop culture you're going to see in the film is going to be from Sony or Universal Studios.
Or Amblin Entertainment, which is obviously Spielberg's company.
Of course.
Yeah.
Now, since I had just recently read the book for the first time, both the film and the book are fresh in my mind. Mm-hmm. So we can, you know, start making a few comparisons.
Yep.
For example, the challenges. The three challenges in the book versus the movie are completely different. For example, in the book, each challenge was actually a two-part challenge. First, you have to get the key, then you do the challenge. Then you have to find the second key to do the second challenge. And then you have to find the third key in order to do the third challenge.
In the film, the keys are the challenge, right?
Yeah, the keys are the challenge.
Yeah.
So they kind of combined these a little bit, and they weren't as long. Mm-hmm. Or as involved. Now, the challenges in the movie tend to be a little bit more fast-paced, mm-hmm. as well as more action-based. Like, for example, the first challenge with the car race.
Right.
The first challenge in the book was going through a dungeon, ending at a throne room where you literally played a video game for 3 hours to try to beat it. That wouldn't have worked as well in a film.
Right.
So I completely understand.
Even though they did do a good job at the end of the film with the guys playing.
Yes, and I think that was their kind of consolation prize there. Mm-hmm. They took the video game playing that they had in some of the challenges, and they put it at the end of the last challenge in the movie, mm-hmm. Which is great. Adventure, it was the last challenge in the mm-hmm. book, as well as the last challenge in the film, even though it was played out a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. In the book, for example, the second challenge was going through Matthew Broderick's War Games.
Mm-hmm. But instead, the film did The Shining.
And that scene, oh my God, it was so creepy.
Oh my God, folks. That was one of the most amazing cinematic feats that I've ever seen. They literally injected these people
into The Shining.
Into The Shining, and it looked real. It looked like they belong there. It looked like they were actually in the film. It blew my mind. I still, to this moment,
theater.
I still, to this moment, do not know how they accomplished that.
The whole theater was going crazy. We were like, no, 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 H, don't go in that room.
Right.
Because we know what's in that room.
Yeah, or when H was walking up to the elevator, and it's like, come on, guys, let's go. And you're like, no!
Don't do it.
Yes, and of course, the naked lady pops out, and you're like, H, get away from that chick. Get away from that chick.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. The third challenge in the book was extremely involved because it went from one part to another to another. There was actually like three sections to it.
All right.
Which is, they definitely shortened that part up in the film.
Well, you kind of have to for a film. You know, you can't put everything that was in a book in the film. And yes, I've heard complaints from people that love the book that said it's totally different in the movie. But at the same time, the author of the book was part of the screenplay process. So basically, he reimagined Ready Player One as this film. So what you're seeing is still from the author's mind, but in a reimagined state, and that's better cinematically.
And here's the thing. The core of the story did not change.
Right.
That still remained the same, even if the little things in between did change.
Right.
For example, his aunt did die in the book.
Yep, and the evil corporation was still the evil corporation.
Yeah, it was still the evil corporation, exactly. Yep. I mean, there were definitely some differences, but the core story is still there. I did not feel like there was anything in the movie that I felt took too many liberties in regards to the book. I feel like if you've read the book and you've watched a movie, it's just the same story told in two different formats, and both work perfectly, in my opinion.
Now, I know some people will say we're being hypocritical because we railed against A Wrinkle in Time for being vastly different from the book in regards to the film.
But again, that was different. They are an example of taking way too many liberties and not sticking to the core story.
And doing it wrong. Right.
And doing it wrong.
And not sticking to the core story. Exactly. That's why we're saying it a little bit differently with Ready Player One, in that even though the actual events in the book are not aligned in the movie, it still felt like you were in the Oasis. It still felt like it was, you know, it kept the story. It kept it right there.
It kept the essence and the core of the story in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's talk specific moments of the movie.
There was one moment in the movie that troubled me a little bit.
Okay.
When his aunt and her aunt's boyfriend and everybody else that was in that stack died, because they destroyed the entire stack, which means everybody there died.
Yep.
I felt like Wade's reaction to the death of his only blood relative
was a little muted, yeah.
Was a little muted, exactly. Yeah. In the book, it was definitely a little bit different in regards to that. Mm-hmm. And his reactions to what had happened was also different. In the book, his reaction to the death of his aunt was still rather muted because he was not very close to her at all. Mm-hmm. She was not a kind woman. But his reaction to the kind old lady who, for example, lived at the base of the stack, he was more upset over her death.
Right.
And that is what had gotten him more motivated. Mm-hmm. At that point, in the book, he actually left the town that he was living in. Because here's the thing. Where in the movie, he lives in the same town where IOI and the GSS company are situated.
Right.
He doesn't in the book. That was the one scene that kind of disturbed me a little bit because, again, you know, his reaction was kind of muted.
Yeah. All right, so while they couldn't have all the references that were in the original book, like Highlander and Ghostbusters and things like that, they did have a ton of references. obviously, Back to the Future, you've all seen it in the trailer with the DeLorean. That was a huge piece to it. The Universal Monsters were there. King Kong. We think a dinosaur from Jurassic Park might have snuck in there. All kinds of great references. We talked about The Shining already. What was your favorite reference?
That would be hard to pick, considering how many there were in there.
Mm-hmm. And some, you know, I cannot wait for this movie to come on Blu-ray, simply because hopefully
there's got
to
be a special feature.
Feature just about every single reference they had, because there's no way, unless you're watching it a million times, you're going to be able to pick out every single reference that was in there. I even saw Lara Croft. Did you see Lara Croft?
Yes, I did. And not to mention that even though there's a lot of 80s references in here, but there's also modern day references mm-hmm. in the show too.
Yeah, the Master Chief from Halo, all kinds mm-hmm. of them, yeah.
I'd have to literally go back through the movie again, because I know there's so many references that I probably missed. But my favorite one to date has to be the video game Adventure reference, because that was literally the first game I ever played.
Really?
Was Adventure.
Oh, wow.
And okay. I used to love that game. I never beat it, but I loved it. And I loved the hidden mazes and the secret rooms. Mm-hmm. That was one of my favorite games growing up.
Well, I'll tell you what my favorite reference was. It was when H tossed Chucky into the DeLorean, and Chucky was not an ally for them. He tried to start killing them with his knife.
They're like, tossed him out of the car.
Yeah, tossed him out of the car out of the sixer. I love that. It was totally Chucky. It would be totally a thing that Chucky would do. He wouldn't care who the heroes or the villains are.
Nope.
He just want to hack everybody up.
Okay.
That was great.
There is one more reference I do have to mention.
Okay.
The gold grenade with the cross.
Yes.
That Wade had bought in the shop,
mm-hmm.
and he actually used that grenade later in the movie.
Right.
That was a total Monty Python reference.
Yes. Right.
And that was awesome.
There was that. Oh, and then of course the cameo of the glaive.
From Crawl.
We just watched Crawl like a year ago. I mean, obviously we'd seen it when we were kids, but. We just recently rewatched it, and
when we saw the glaive, we're like,
it was like the glaive!
But the thing is, we were having those kinds of reactions throughout the entire film. Yep. Every single time we recognized something. And there was a Highlander reference, even though if it was a bit obscure.
Yes.
The Silver Cup building.
Yeah, they couldn't really do much with Highlander because they didn't have the rights, but you saw the Silver Cup building
which is part of New York.
Yeah, where the Kurgan and Connor McLeod had their epic battle, right?
So they still snuck that in there because Highlander was a huge part of the book.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, we both really love this film, so giving it a rating is pretty much pointless because we're both going to give it at least a 10.
Or more.
Or more, right? Do you think there's sequel potential to this film?
That would be tough because... even though the author has written other books with a lot of, you know, pop culture references,
he never made a direct sequel to
Ready Player One. I want there to be.
Yeah.
I want there to be a continuation to this story. So I hope that even if he doesn't write a book to it, that I'm hoping that he will maybe do another sequel in screenplay format, make another movie, because I loved it so much. I want to see more of the Oasis.
Yep. And so, how, in any of his other books, did he ever go back to the Oasis, or was that self-contained and Ready Player?
I have not read any of his other books yet, so I can't opine to that.
All right. So, there you have it, Ready Player One. Go see it. It was a fantastic film. For people of our age range, it is a smorgasbord of just...
oh my, of Geek Fest, geeking out!
Our history, our culture, geeking out. The movie's worth seeing just for the Shining scene alone, folks.
Yes.
I mean, it was fantastic. Fantastic film. Go see it!
It makes me wish the Oasis was real.
Yes. Coming up next, we are going to talk to Alan Seiler, the director of Hulanta, to talk about one of the top Doctor Who conventions in all of the U.S. Right?
Right.
Coming up next.
ESO, 7 years of keeping it really geeky.
Hey! What are you trying to do? You ruined my record, man! I just bought it!
Hey, you guys!
How exciting! Spoilers!
Come! 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas,
half a pack of cigarettes, it's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Bye-bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.
The Earth Station 1 podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstation1.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
Hello, this is Nick Briggs, the voice of the Daleks, and you're listening to Transmissions from Atlantis. And I urge you to listen, or you will be exterminated!
Laugh hard.
Run fast.
Be kind. Doctor, I let you go.
Alright folks, you know that music, and it's time for Doctor Who, and let's get started with an introduction to the director of Wholanta, R. Alan Seiler.
Awesome.
Hi, Alan.
Right.
Hello.
How's everything going?
Great, and it's the second year of Wholanta, but it's been around a little bit longer.
This is number 13 for us.
Whoa, lucky 13.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it coincides with 13th Doctor, so we planned it precisely, you know. 13 years ago, we knew this would happen. So, yeah, our 13th year and our 13th Doctor at the same time.
All right, so how was your first year since becoming Wholanta?
It went well. There wasn't, you know, we spent most of that whole year getting people used to the new name. And, you know, the first time that I got up on stage at our opening ceremony at that first convention, I said, "Welcome to Timegate." So obviously everybody was far more acclimated to the new name than I was. I spent an entire year calling us Wholanta. And then I get up and I was the one that pushed for the name change. I'm the one that wanted it. So then I get up on stage in front of our first crowd and say, "Welcome to Timegate," which was, you know, just the most genius thing that could have happened.
Right.
It actually took me probably the better part of a year and a half to actually
start
saying
that. No. Yeah. I still slip up every once in a while, but, you know, that was, what, 11 years of it. So that's a long time. In con world, that's a long time.
So in the 13 years of Timegate and Wholanta, who has been your favorite guest to come to the convention?
Every one of them equally. I love them all. It's the same answer as when you asked me my favorite doctor. I love every one of them. But seriously, and, you know, and I hate to single anybody out because that means I'm leaving somebody else out of the list, but absolutely, hands down, because she is the most magical creature in the universe, Katie Manning. She is just the most effervescently joyful person in existence, and you can't be around her and not feel sunshine radiating from her. She's just amazing.
I think I remember you had a few other people saying that she's a hugger.
Oh my gosh, yes. you try to get her from her autographing to main programming or whatever, and she has to stop to hug every child that comes by her. And if there's a dog, she has to pet it. So, you know, it takes, you have to plan this, you know, in her transportation. You have to remember that she will talk to every person that comes by. She is the best hugger there is.
All right. So over the years, you've had some of the biggest guests in Doctor Who, including Paul McGann and Colin Baker. Who do you have for this year's Doctor Who?
This year, we have two big ones. Louise Jameson, who played Leela in the 70s with Tom Baker. She's going to be here. She is still playing Leela in Big Finish audio dramas. And she also has two other series of her own that she's doing. One is a television show that she did back in the 70s or 80s, maybe, called, I just lost the name, the Andromeda, Omega Factor, that's it. They've adapted that to Big Finish. And she has a new series that she has written and created called Atta Girl, ATA, which is the women pilots in World War II.
Oh, cool.
So it's like, very cool. You know, I know exactly. So she, you know, in addition to still playing Leela, she's got these other two projects going on. Plus, she's constantly working in theater. And I'm really excited about her. I've wanted to meet her for a million years. And she used to be in this series back in the 80s called Tenko, which is a group of British and Dutch women kidnapped by the Japanese and held in a World War II prison of war camp. And wow. It is the most amazing show ever. And even though she loves Doctor Who, Tenko is her favorite television project she's ever done. So I think it's really interesting that in this new audio drama, she's returning to a World War II setting. So obviously,
she cool.
has some affinity with that. But in addition to Louise, we have Rachel Talalay, who's a powerhouse television director. She actually got her start in movies. She worked on the Freddy series, and then she did a little cult thing called Tank Girl.
Oh, Tank Girl. I used to love that movie.
Yep.
Tank Girl is amazing. And I've heard from a number of people who are Tank Girl fans who have their Tank Girl cosplays like all ready to go.
Awesome.
So they're like, and one guy has got Tank Girl on, he's got the VHS, he's got a DVD, he's going to try to get a Laserdisc and a Betamax. He wants it in every format, and he's going to get Rachel's autograph on them. Wow. But she has directed heavily in Peter Capaldi's three seasons. She did each one of his series finales and did his last episode, the Christmas episode, which has now been nominated for a Hugo Award.
Oh, nice.
So, very exciting. Yep. She's also very involved in all the CW superhero shows. She's done Flash and Supergirl and Legends of Tomorrow. And she has another Flash episode that's coming up in a few weeks, actually. The end of this month, one of her ones that she directed is coming up. So she and I met her at Gallifrey One in LA, and she is amazing. So she is a formidable, formidable woman, and I can't wait for all the Hoolanta audience to meet her. She's amazing.
That's going to be a heck of an interview segment.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Don't want to miss that panel.
No way. Yep.
Totally. Saturday and Sunday. I don't remember what time. But the Hoolanta schedule, the programming schedule, will be published in just a couple of days. So
Yay!
Then everybody will know when everything happens, including me.
So one of the most interesting tracks at Hoolanta is the Otherworlds track. What do you have going on there?
That's a good question. Let's see. Otherworlds, we've got a couple of Star Trek panels going on because Discovery just wrapped up, and so we have a panel about that. And this year is the 25th anniversary of Deep Space Nine, my personal favorite Trek series. So we have a couple of those going on. We've got this is H.P. Lovecraft's 100th anniversary. His birthday. So we have a retrospective on Lovecraft. We've got some, a couple of Star Wars things. One about the most recent movie and, you know, kind of the fan reaction to it, how there was a lot of sort of like negative backlash toward it. Like, what was it that fans were looking for that they didn't see in the movie? So that's a panel. Yeah. So we got all kinds of things going on in Other Worlds. Other Worlds is our everything that's not Doctor Who or British.
So there's going to be another masquerade this year?
Yes, there is. We've got a sign-up form online on our website, which is wholanta.com. So if you go there, you can go ahead and sign up for the masquerade, or you can do it on-site. You know, once we get to the con, you can sign up there as well. So yes, definitely a masquerade and a cabaret, which is our big fundraiser event every year. Our masquerade is $5 to get in, but 100% of that money goes to our charity each year. And this year, our charity is an organization in Atlanta called Fur Kids, which is the largest no-kill animal shelter, rescue, and adoption service in the South. Yes, exactly. And they're hopefully going to be on site.
With fur babies?
Yes.
Really?
And they are the largest no-kill animal rescue, shelter, and adoption service in the Southeast. So we're very excited to be working with them for our first time.
Okay, so in the past, you've had some concerts and performances like the David Bowie Tribute Band and the Prince Dance Night. Is there anything going on special this year at the con?
We have a couple of things, actually. We have a performer named Kat Smith, who is a ukulelist and a songwriter, and she's going to be doing a couple of things for us. She has a show on Friday night at 9 o'clock. But before that, at 8 o'clock, we have a local puppet troupe called Felt Nerdy, and they have been with us for the past couple of years. And they are going to be doing a show on Friday night, and they're going to be part of our, and both of them, Kat Smith as well as Felt Nerdy, are going to be part of our cabaret on Saturday night. And then we're doing something that's called Solid Gold, and it's basically a countdown of Murray Gold's 10 best
Now that's cool.
Yeah,
Murray 10 Gold. Best themes that he's written for the show in the 13 years that he's been on the show, because this is, you know, he's now done with Doctor Who, moving on to other things. So we thought we'd do a little farewell and sort of remind people of the amazing stuff that he's done for the show.
And of course, our big announcement is that we will be having a sneak preview for congoers of Seekers of the Lost Worlds, the film that Rita and I produced, directed, and wrote, at the convention.
Woohoo! That's awesome.
So we really are excited about that. And we're also a little bit nervous because it's also the first time that people who aren't our friends or family have seen
that. That's really cool. That's so exciting. Yeah. I can't wait to see it. And so, you'll have to send me some graphics and stuff that we can put on the website. And
we're going to bring a nice big poster.
Oh, sweet. That's awesome.
And we're going to bring one for you, too.
Yeah.
Our last and most important question for you, Alan. If there's only one Doctor Who convention that fans can go to this year, why would it be Wholanta?
Well, I'll tell you what, we're kind of a small convention. We're not, you know, Gallifrey One, which is, you know, 3,200 people, and they have a lot to offer. And I love Gallifrey One. We're a little bit smaller. We have a very, family friendly atmosphere. We have a lot of stuff going on, not just for Doctor Who fans, but if you're a fan of, you know, British properties like Sherlock and Blake 7 and Red Dwarf, we have stuff going on for that. We've got stuff that's, you know, non-British and Doctor Who. So we've got all these things. We've got some great guests. We have a full track of kids programming that'll be running throughout the weekend, and we have a lot of cool things lined up for that, like a simulated astronaut training for kids. I know, it sounds amazing, doesn't it? We're going to turn one of the ballrooms into a zero-G environment. But I mean, just that alone would put us on the convention map forever.
Yeah. or on the hotel crap list forever.
And that's the thing. I know about that. So keep it. Yeah, it's better for them to find out after we've already done it. I went to a KISS convention one time, and they had a cover band. And you know, hotels are notorious for being careful about smoke and fire and things like that. And the guy who was playing Gene Simmons did the fire breathing act, and I was like, I bet they did not tell the hotel they were doing that. But anyways, back to the question. Yeah. We've got so much stuff going on there. For a convention our size, we have a lot of programming tracks, so you're never at a loss to have something cool to do. And we just love doing what we do, and we love meeting new people, and we love showing people a good time and giving them a lot of great entertainment. So yeah, we would love to have everybody come out.
All right. So how do people get tickets and find out more?
Okay. You can go to whoolanta.com. You can get memberships there for a little bit longer. They'll be cut off in 2 weeks, I think, is the last time that you can get tickets in advance. And then I think it's $45 now, and tickets are $60 at the door. So buy early. And the deadline to book a hotel room is coming up pretty quickly too. So we are at the Hilton down at the airport. So if anybody's coming in from another area, you could like walk from the airport to us.
When is the convention?
It is May 4th through 6th.
All right, Alan, thank you so much for joining us. It was a real pleasure having you on.
Yeah, I'm so glad to be here. Appreciate it. And I can't wait to see the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so thanks to Alan Seiler for joining us. That was awesome, right?
Yeah, so hopefully, if you haven't heard about Whoolanta yet, there's still time to get tickets.
Yep.
You can even get tickets at the door. There's still room at the hotel.
Yep.
So please come to Atlanta, check out Whoolanta, because if you're a Doctor Who fan, you're not going to want to miss it.
But like Alan said, you're running out of time, so do it like now.
Like right now.
Now. All right, so let's also talk a little bit about Stephen Moffat. So Stephen Moffat has found a way to bring Peter Cushing into the Doctor Who canon.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, why don't you tell us all about it, Jason?
So, apparently, Moffat is now writing some spinoff books, and he also kind of did this little thing in Day of the Doctor. Everybody remembers the Doctor Who 50th anniversary Day of the Doctor, where when you're in the Black Archive, you saw posters of Peter Cushing's movies, Doctor Who movies, in the background, right?
Oh, see, I think I missed that.
Yeah. I missed that the first time as well, but apparently that was in there somewhere. And so he kind of expanded on that a little bit, where he, in his novelization, he talked about how the first Doctor was good friends with Peter Cushing and allowed Peter Cushing to create the Doctor Who films based on the first Doctor.
Oh.
And he liked the movie so much that in appreciation, he brought Peter Cushing into the future to play a role in a major motion picture. Now, what film just recently had Peter Cushing in digital form?
Star Wars.
Rogue One, right? So, in Doctor Who canon, that's actually Peter Cushing, not this computer-generated Peter Cushing.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. What do you think of that?
Interesting and still yet a little confusing.
So I think I personally think it's a really cool way of bringing the Peter Cushing Doctor into the Doctor Who universe without making him an actual Doctor, because he was the farthest thing from the Doctor that you can get.
Sure.
Right?
Very true.
All right, so that's going to do it for Doctor Who, and that basically does it for this particular episode of Transmissions from Atlantis. We again want to thank Alan Seiler for joining us. Hulanta is going to be a fantastic convention. Seekers of the Lost World is going to have its sneak preview there, so definitely come check it out. Also, don't forget the ESO Patreon account. There are very cool things that are being posted up on ESO Patreon. Check it out. We got the URL right there. And it's definitely worth the $5 or whatever it is you can throw at it to get to that extra content. Obviously, our review of Black Panther is up there. There's some Dr. Geek stuff that's there now. And plus, all the other podcast shows are contributing special Patreon donor stuff, swag, awesomeness.
Yep. And don't forget, we've recently made the announcement. Seekers of the Lost World will be having its premiere in Tampa this coming July 12th.
Yes.
So keep an eye out on our Facebook page and
for exact times and when you can get tickets, because yes, tickets will be open to the public.
Yep, and you'll be able to order it even through Fandango.com. So we'll keep you posted on all news in regards to the Tampa premiere.
Absolutely. But until next time,
Elonzi.
Elonzi. Goodbye, everybody.
Look sharp, Rose Tyler, Alonzi. And then it'd be really brilliant if I met someone called Alonzo, because then I could say Alonzi, Alonzo, every time.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.